Blog Talk Radio.
Heavy blues, that's what I started writing was blues originally, kind of a blues.
really heavily distorted. And then I gravitated towards down-tuned music while I was there. I did a lot of covers and my own music for quite a while, late at all the holidays. Then I think I wrote 32 songs over there. I've got all of them still, everything in the same paper I wrote it on. And I got so into it that I just decided when I get out, that's going to be my goal. I'm going to build a big band around good musicians, solid musicians, not a bar band, not a cover band, and it's just evolving into what I wanted it to be.
What would you say is your favorite Attica 7 song?
That's hard to say, but Devil's Daughter, Serial Killer, All or Nothing, Lockdown. I can keep going, man. It ended up being the whole damn
yeah,
album almost.
I gotta agree with you with that. I mean, there's not a bad song on the CD. But can you take us back to where you were physically and mentally when you wrote one of these songs and what was going through your mind there?
When I wrote Lockdown, I was in a cell. And if you listen to the lyrics in Lockdown, it's an inmate. And it's definitely a serious prison song. Another one, No Redemption, wearing a number on your chest, having eyes in the back of your head, because that was the thing. You always had a number on, and you had to have eyes in the back of your head all the time.
Do you feel that had you not went to prison, that you would be where you're at today musically?
If I didn't go to prison, Attica 7 wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be playing music. It completely changed my life when I went in there. I redirected my thinking, and I'm glad. I love the music. I love what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing with my business, building these fights. I love the music even more. And the TV, the different things that I'm into now, I mean, I'm enjoying every day. That's one thing I can say is out of that experience, when I finally did get out, I appreciate every day. Even a bad day is a great day.
One of the things that I noticed that when I went out to cover the Uproar tour is after I saw your band, there was an it factor, a magic, a something that that people can relate to and forget about problems and stuff like that with your music. And I fully believe that people are going to jump into your genre from others and come together with your music. What do you feel is the reason for that?
I think one of the reasons that that our music is so universal, it's not just one little niche like metal or just rock or something else. It draws people from all different genres because there is a little blues influence in there. There's the rock influence, there's the metal influence, and every riff that's in there was written with feeling. I mean, when I write riffs for music, I don't just write riffs to write riffs. I write riffs that I feel, hooks that I feel, and it's got to really, like, make the hair stand up on the back of your neck kind of a thing. You know, it's like I know when I got those sweet spots in the groove, and that's what I incorporate into my choruses, into my verses, the breakdowns. I try to get the whole thing woven together so it's a feeling that you have. It's not just music. It's you feel the music, and that's important. You've got to feel those hooks. That's what the hooks are, you know? And the same with the lyrics. When I write lyrics, 90% of the time, I write the lyrics after I've done all the riffs. And the choruses, everything, they fall together. But I start out with the first line. First line is always the hardest line when I write because it sets the pace for everything to follow. And then it just starts flowing like water. And it's very, a little bit of poetry. But it always tells a story almost every time. I don't want to just write ridiculous sentences, you know, just to fill the void with vocals. You know, I want it to tell a story. If you wrote it as poetry or just as a story. It has a beginning and an end, usually.
My photography and my video is, I try to look at things as a voyeur, in letting people see the world through my camera. I see that same thing in your music. I mean, people are able to come into where you were and experience that, or, you know, relate things to their lives. What's your trick to letting people see that?
Well, like in the song Serial Killer, I'm not a killer. I've never killed anybody. But just as when you're an actor, you know, you act, you kill people in the movie, that doesn't make you a killer. But you have to be into that part. You have to become that person. And when I wrote that song, I really had to get deep into the character of this serial killer that was telling the story in his lyrics. And if you listen to the lyrics in that song, that's what it is. This is a guy that, he's a killer. He doesn't necessarily want to be a killer. He can't help it. The demons take over, and he does what he does. It's not like he's looking for this to happen. It happens, and he tells it as the story comes out. When you're listening to the song, it's very evident that he's almost a victim of himself.
Wow. See, and I think that's the magic that all your songs have is you let people see it from the real thing. I mean, the real deal. The you know, what's in the mind of a serial killer. I mean, who knows that? And
yeah, I'll tell you, I've been in some places, I've been around some people that were that kind of people, and it emanates out of some of them. It just emanates so bad. I mean, you can feel it before they even say anything. And then there's others that they're like multiple personality type of people. They would be the nicest people in the world, but the other side of them is the homicidal side that flips. And it's like they're the most dangerous ones because they're a chameleon. And you can never trust people like that. But I've been in situations with a lot of people that are that type of people, both those kind of killers. And to try to put your mind in that place is, it takes a minute to get there. And if you want to write something that's believable with that feeling, you have to get your mind there. You have to be that person to do it.
That's a scary thing to attempt to get into a place like that and get out.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I remember specifically when I did that, and I remember the feeling I had, and it wasn't a good feeling, let me tell you. I wouldn't be proud to think like that on a daily basis, let me tell you.
Well, there's not too many writers that are going to be able to come up with the music that you have, and again, I think that's probably the biggest part of listening to your CD that's out right now, that it's just every song on there. I mean, I instantly bought the CD, and there's not a song on there I don't like.
We've got a really, really good team of players right now. Without even under our belt, we can go out and play shows, and we did. And a lot of the time, you take players, you're going to have to play at least 7, 8, 9 rehearsals together before they're actually tight enough to go out in public. We didn't even need to do that in this case.
Yeah, I saw you guys on your second show, and I was hooked right then and there. Like I said, I think I even really got in trouble because I didn't photograph any other bands but you guys. But it pretty much paid off, and I think the other thing I liked about Attica 7 is that it was so cool to see you guys after you perform. You're at the merch booth, and you're there till the time you guys leave. I mean, you were there with a solid line of fans, taking pictures and signing autographs, and I mean, you, to me, that's a true rock star. I mean, you are passionate. It's like you guys, if you could afford it, would go out there and play for free, you know, just to play that music. I mean, that's kind of what I got from that.
Yeah, if it was just about the money, we would have quit doing this a long time ago. I would have quit way before I hooked up with the lineup that we have now. Money has nothing to do with it. And the fans, they're the most important, and we really appreciate it when we see these fans that come from 100 miles away or more to see the show, you know, stay at motels, and I mean, that's really true fans, and we're going to do everything we can to make that experience as good as we can for them. And when the show's over with, we're going to spend time with them, we're going to sign autographs, give them merch, you know, sell them merch, give them merch, everything. you know, we're going to make the experience as best we can for them.
It was funny watching you guys, you know, have fun with this, where you were throwing out the shot glasses and people were catching them as they're going by, and
yeah.
And you know, the parts that a lot of the fans don't get an opportunity to see, like well, you know, the rock star life where you're living in truck stops and things like that. But and you even had on your tour manager Al. Wasn't there a couple of episodes with him where some things happened there with truck stops?
There's episodes with Al all the time. I have fun with him daily, man. He's great entertainment. Yeah, I left him at least one truck stop. I actually sent him out to check the rear tire one time, and while he was out there, I locked the door, drove off, and left him at the truck stop. Hey, Al, come up here, will you? What's up, Rusty?
I think that rear tire's low, man. Would you check that back, the tag axle?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, man, thanks.
Hey, shut that door when you get out, will you?
We're going to leave his ass again, man. I got to lock this door.
I can't believe he left his ass.
I remember another time at another truck stop, he was outside doing whatever, fueling or something, and I took off, and he actually ran, jumped up on the mirror of the bumper and held onto the thing, so I couldn't get rid of him. That time I had to stop and let him in. And I think at another venue, we were backing out, and I had him help back the bus out. He was guiding me as soon as I got out, took off. And I heard these, I had the door open still while I was driving. It sounded like Fred Flintstone trying to catch the bus with those heavy feet. I said, man, this guy can run, man. I had no clue he could run like that. I finally let him in that time, too. He deserved it. You know, he had to run quite a ways, you know. So,
you know, musically or through life in itself, if you could go back in time and change something, what would you change?
You know, it's funny because you say that, like, you know, I've thought about this many times. I would love to change the mistakes I made that sent me to prison. But then I think if I changed what sent me to prison last time, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I'd be going in a whole other direction. So I took a very bad experience that happened to me in 1999, and I turned it into a good thing. I took everything I had to work with and flipped it. And because of that, I'm so happy with everything I'm doing, I don't want to change that. And I would have to take that back, because there's really not much that I regret since I've been released. It's all been a pretty good trip.
Your bike building, I mean, this shop is, I mean, you're sitting in front of an $80,000 bike right there, and your bikes are amazing. Where's that going to go with Attica 7, you know, taking off?
You know, I look at what I have going on here like a triangle. It's like the devil's triangle. I've got Illusion, I've got the music, and I've got the TV, and it's all interlinked, and they all work for each other. So what one does pulls the other up, and they're all connected all the time, and I love it. It's a great cross-promotional type of a thing. Personal branding, bands, brand, bikes, brand, everything's doing well. So the better the music does, I think the better the bike business will do.
And the TV, Sons of Anarchy, that's a huge, huge show. I mean, how did that happen?
You know, it's just that was luck. You know, Kurt Sutter's a great guy. I really like him. He started that show 5 years ago, and he's a smart guy. He went out and did his homework. He came by here. He's visited many Hell's Angels. He wanted to go to the top of the food chain and learn about clubs, and he did. And it's a drama. You know, it's not real, but it can't be real. If you're going to be entertaining, you have to be dramatic. You have to have a lot of that stuff going on. That's what people need to not lose focus of. You know, it's a fantasy, but it's great. You know, but he did a lot of work in reality so that he could have the most realistic of fantasies. And look at it, it's a cult following, man. The thing's crazy. It's over 500 million people regularly watching this. I'm honored to be part of it.
I've had the incredible fortune to travel with you guys on the road for, and what seems to be months, but it's only been, what, a couple weeks?
with you, you wear on us a lot. It does seem like yours to me, you know what I mean?
I don't make too many mistakes, but the ones I do make are pretty big, so.
Oh, like leaving me in a truck stop? Yeah, that was a good one. At 4 a.m, I think it was?
Yeah, it was pretty cold,
oh,
too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I felt pretty
I'm
bad.
I'm glad
about
I
that.
Had my phone with me. That's all I could say. Or you guys would have been all the way to L.A. before you figured it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we're going to put footage of that up there. So, but one of the things that I noticed is that everything that you do, whether you're driving a bus or orchestrating the band and your organizational skills and your leadership skills and when we go places, like last night, the Rainbow, after you played at the Key Club, I mean, they closed the place down, but you and your few select friends were allowed to stay. Something about you is just, you know, people love. You know, what do you think that is?
I just try to treat everybody the way that I want to be treated. And I look at people, you know, and I give them the equal respect that they deserve. And there's so many people out there to feel entitled, to take. You know what I mean? And I hate that. Nobody's entitled like that. You should treat everybody the way you want to be treated, because when somebody treats you bad with disrespect, you're not happy. And the people you treat bad feel the same way. It's no different. Nobody's entitled to treat anybody bad that doesn't deserve it, you know? So treat people the way they deserve to be treated, you know? And people will appreciate that. That's all. Just being fair, man. Consequences are the most important thing to think about. Everybody, the action that you do, whether it be good or bad, always has consequences. If you do a negative action, there's negative consequences. The bigger the action, the bigger the consequence. And those consequences don't go away. The action takes 2 seconds. We're all capable of all types of violence, all types of good, all types of bad. Anybody, I mean, from the smallest person, it doesn't matter your size. It matters your will to do it. And there's a lot of people out there, and they say, I don't care. I don't give a fuck. Well, you know what? You're going to care when you get nailed. You're going to care when you pay those consequences. Because all this stuff out here, if you've never done time, been locked away in cells for a long time, you have no idea the consequences. And the people that have done it and say, oh, it ain't shit, well, I don't even fuck those guys. Their opinion doesn't matter anyway. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. What's it like being in a little cell, solitary?
You know, you get used to it. I'm sad to say, but you have to. If you don't get used to it, you're not going to survive. You're going to go nuts. People are adaptable. You can do just about anything, and over time, somebody's going to be adapting to whatever it is. You know, whether it be torture. In this day and age, there's not physical torture, but they've refined mental torture to a fine art. And if you've got the government pissed off at you, they have many ways to mentally break you down. And they'll try, you know. And if you're strong, you won't be broke down, but you're not going to have a good time while they're trying.
Absolutely. Attica 7, it's www.attica7.com. We got some great stuff coming up in the future, you think, here?
Yeah, I'm real excited about what's going on right now. I don't want to get into the details because it hasn't happened yet, and it's not good to talk about things that haven't happened yet with certainty, but we've got some good things coming up in 2013. I think you guys will be seeing us in many places.
Okay, so right now your fans can get CD on your website.
They can go to our website. They can go to iTunes, Amazon. I think FYE or FYI, one of those stores, and Best Buy.
Best Buy?
Yeah.
All right. And merchandise, shirts, things like that?
You got shirts, CDs, hats, posters, and the stuff's growing. You know, it's kind of in the infancy right now.
Music videos on the coming up?
Yeah, we do have one music video for Serial Killer that's done right now. I don't know if we're going to re-edit it. It's a good video, but I want to have a great video. So we'll see what happens there. We have plans for a series of videos coming up here within the next 2 to 3 months.
Fantastic. All right. Well, the fans are going to be in for a treat. I mean, like I said, I've been fortunate enough to travel with you guys, and you are my ultimate favorite. I've listened to a lot of bands, been with a lot of bands, but when people ask me what was your favorite tour, I'm going to have to say Attica 7.
Right on, man. You want me to pay you now? Well, I left my wallet.
Check would be fine.
My wallet's at home, sorry, man.
Actually, I was thinking about a new bike. I mean, that one behind you looks pretty
what?
Good. So. A new bike.
What?
Bike.
I can't hear you. What?
Motorcycle.
Huh? I can't hear you. I've been playing so much, I can't hear you.
That thing behind you lit up really
beautiful. Good.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
My sight's messed up too, man. I gotta start getting rest.
Yeah. All right.
I'm Rusty Coons with the band Attica 7, and you've been watching Rock Biz Magazine.
This is not just the last.
With all your friends from Sons of Anarchy at Comic Con this weekend.
I know. I was filming with everybody on.
Why didn't you go to Comic Con? Oh my God.
Yeah, I had to leave. We shot all night. Well, I can't say anything about this, what we're doing.
Yeah, I know.
But
that's what they were telling me too.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't talk about specifics of the show. You can only say you're working on the show. And but when we were done working, the next day they were going to that, and I flew out to come back on tour.
How has that been for you? I mean, that's got to be a lot of hectic.
Oh man, I'll give you an example. I started work on the set, and I got up at 5 in the morning. I was on the set at 6 yesterday, and worked, and then I didn't get any sleep. Then I went over to, because I have three businesses. I work with the TV stuff, I work with the Illusion motorcycle, and with the music. So I had to go by the shop over there and deal with things over there. Then I headed to the airport, flew all night, landed here this morning. I was 70 miles away. I had to have a town car pick me up and give me a ride here just in time to get breakfast and then get ready and do our show.
God. Like, how do you keep it all straight? Like, do you sleep at all? No.
I do, but it's like I get little bits of sleep. You know, it's like sometimes you get really tired, but if you take like a cat nap, you're refreshed.
Well, then, I mean, you guys tore it up on the stage this afternoon, too. It's fantastic. That, yeah, it was absolutely phenomenal. And I mean, what?
My guitarist broke a string during the set. We switched it out. I faked it. And then the second one, he gave me the top E was out of tune.
Well, you faked it well.
Yeah. But I'm looking at the guy. He's wearing a bumblebee suit. That's my guitar tech. I said, could you pay a little more attention to my strings and a little less to the, you know, but it's funny. I actually encourage him to be that, you know. So I was going to, if there weren't any other problems, I was going to throw the bumblebee out into the pit and have everybody chase him.
That could have worked too.
Yeah.
That would have been an exciting mayhem adventure.
He used to work for Dimebag, and they did that to him.
Oh, God.
And he had a bumblebee outfit back then. They threw him out in the pit, and he got beat up.
God. I'm not surprised coming out of Pantera's camp that that
happened. I love that kind of stuff, you know.
It keeps it interesting and exciting. Like, it's rock and roll, man.
Yeah, before the show, I was looking at the tech up there. He's getting everything ready. And he's wearing a bumblebee outfit, and I thought it was great.
So, I mean, other than being incredibly busy, how has your mayhem experience been so far?
I'm loving it. You know, it's great. We're hitting a lot of major music markets across the United States. I think the tour has 26 stops, one stop in Canada, which we skipped. It's just not worth the hassle for me to go up there and go through all the legal wrangling, that, you know, for one show. And we've got incredible fans all across the states where we've appeared at. teamed up with Mayhem and Rock, Rockstar Mayhem and Revolver Magazine to give away downloads of our whole album for free. So right now, for a limited time, you can go on to the Revolver Mag website online and you can download our whole album free.
I think that's the best way to kind of spread the message. I mean, that's the way so many people are sharing music now anyway.
Yeah, I mean, people steal it anyway, but the thing is, a lot of people would not give their album away like that. We don't care about that. When we do touring, we offset the costs with all the sales on the merch and all the other things, the money we make. So we're okay, you know what I mean? And we're not looking to make money off the music. We would rather spread it.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's, I think a lot of fans share your sentiments, like, on that, because they just want people to hear them and know that somebody is paying attention, definitely.
Yeah, it's like, we get, every time we come to a place we haven't been, like today here, the fans say, wow, man, I just discovered you guys. I love you guys, you know, and that's what we want to hear.
So are there any bands that you've been able to check out at Mayhem?
Checked out pretty much all of them. Yeah, there's a lot of good talent here, man. Really good bands from one end of the spectrum to the other.
Yeah. What's next for you guys after Mayhem?
Well, we're doing some Uproar dates, Rockstar Energy Uproar. And
that's a good tour, too. Long of them.
Yeah, we've done it before, West Coast last year. And we're going to be doing the radio shows, not the whole tour, I don't think. And then other than that, we're still working on the bookings and stuff that'll be happening.
What can you share with us about any new music, new album?
We have two new, brand new songs that we're actually playing on the tour. And we're actually giving some of those away to the people that are here that are seeing us live. But we're not going to distribute those through the online, you know, promotion, because those will probably end up in the next album or EP. And what we've done is we've changed the lineup a little in the band. We've got Ira Black on the second guitar, and he's a really renowned shredder, and me and him blend our styles together really. It's really unique.
Good when you have that chemistry on stage. It's like very, very apparent.
Yeah, well, you saw it today. And now what it's done is it's really cool, because we're evolving to another kind of a feel with our music, which is cool. I always like doing that, you know. And so we brought a whole other flavor to it. It's kind of like we took a car that was really fast, and now we put a supercharger on it. So.
I guess that you guys aren't afraid to evolve. I think any band that gets stuck in a box, like, it becomes very monotonous to them, you know, and it's always good to hear something different.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always down for change. I'm always down for going forward and changing it up, making it interesting, man. So we're having a lot of fun with it. And the direction of the music, we don't even know where it's going to end up, because we've got so many ideas of things we want to do.
When do you guys find time to write and get together for that?
It's kind of funny. We go through, like, phases where we're really writing and doing a lot of rehearsing, and then we go through times when we're just kind of, like, on a hiatus from that. We're dealing with all the business and stuff. Right now, we're kind of in a writing mode. We were before we came on tour also. So what we're going to do is when we get back, we've already got some stuff that's being mixed right now while we're gone, that we just did another new one. And we've got some other ones that we haven't recorded yet that we'll finish up. So kind of we're in that mode right now. Is that going to change? I doubt it. You know, I think we're going to write some stuff for a while.
So on a personal level, I look at music as a universal language we can all speak and understand. What do you hope your music will say to listeners? Is there a certain emotion you hope it'll invoke?
You know, it's kind of a two-pronged thing. That if you listen to the lyrics on a lot of the stuff, the lyrics are pretty heavy. That's just metal, you know. That's why the lyrics are that way. Just like country's country, you know, and metal's metal. That's why the lyrics are heavy lyrics like that. The feeling you get with me is when I write these songs, I have a feeling when I'm writing the riffs on the fretboard. There's sweet spots, I call it. And when you hit riffs, they hit those sweet spots, and it really, it brings a feeling in you to the surface. And that's what I base them on. Usually 90% of the songs I will write the riffs first, and once we get those down, then we do the lyrics.
I'm sure the creative process is just as therapeutic to you as an artist as it is to the listener that's hearing it also.
Oh yeah, it feels good. You're creating something that you really love. You're doing it your way, and it's like, you know, it's your creation, you know, so yeah, it is therapeutic.
Even for you personally, you get to pursue like all three loves here, so that's awesome.
Now that I feel real fortunate. I tell you, it's so great to be able to do three different jobs that you love, you know, and it's really hectic and busy a lot of the time, but I don't care, man, it's worth it. I love it.
Personally, I feel life is too short to not do what you enjoy doing, and like it's awesome to witness people that are able to blend all those things together.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, you're blessed when you can have this kind of a situation where you're really busy doing things you love to do.
So, other than trying to record and do anything, are there any other touring plans for after Mayhem?
Well, you know, we have the uproar I told you about, and we're going to be working for bookings on some stuff after that. We haven't solidified.
Awesome. That's great. So what's one of the craziest things you've witnessed on Mayhem so far?
My bus driving by itself at 75 miles an hour down the interstate while I went to get
what?
The refrigerator.
Wow, how did that occur?
I've got a video of it if you want to see it.
Kind of interesting.
go to Attica7 Facebook and you'll see it. It's funny. Yeah.
Well, speaking of social media, how have you guys like embraced that as a tool and an asset? I mean, it's certainly not the way it used to be. I mean, that's...
It's totally different. We're totally into it. You know, we've got the Twitter, we've got the Facebook stuff, we've got the Instagram and the website.
Fans love it.
Yeah, man, it's interactive. People are right there. People get on there, you know, yeah, I was just at that show, and they send in their videos like we had. So I'll tell you, there is two things that come to mind now that we're talking about the fans. There was a guy in a wheelchair at one of our shows. I think it was Mountain View, California, by Frisco. And he was in the mosh pit. He got knocked out of his wheelchair. So the people in the mosh pit picked him up, helped him get back in his chair, and then they hoisted him above their head, and they crowd surfed him toward the stage, and then they kept chanting in unison, on the stage, on the stage. And there's video of this on YouTube. It's really cool. And they handed the guy to us on stage, and he stayed on stage for the rest of the set. That was pretty cool. You
can imagine what your reaction would be to like see that. Yeah, you're like, oh my gosh, like.
Yeah, we said let him on, you know, and we got him on, and the guy was a full metal head, you know, and he was excited as hell. It was probably one of the best days of his life.
Oh, I can only imagine. That's so exciting. But
another thing that happened just a few days ago, we were in Hartford, Connecticut, and we did a song called Devil's Daughter. So Evan gets all the girls, says, hey, this is about all you evil, nasty girls that cause us all to do crazy stuff, you know? He says, I want you to open up the biggest mosh pit you can, and just everybody out, all the guys out of there, and just the girls go in there. We had a big metal mosh pit of women. Yeah.
I think that's a first.
Great.
I think that's a first.
You go look at that on the website. You'll see it's on there on the Facebook for sure. And there's a big cloud of dust, man. They were moving.
The girls can throw down just as well as the guys in pits.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking a few minutes to speak with me. I appreciate it. We certainly look for more to come from you guys. Definitely keep us posted on new music and everything, and can't wait for new season of Sons of Anarchy to start soon.
Watch season 6. It's going to be fun. Oh, yeah. All right. Thank you.